Okay, so we're continuing our series on breaking the Ten Commandments and actually breaking down the Ten Commandments and looking at the hidden meanings and the symbolism behind these laws, which when they were given were very rigid. I mean, that was the law when the Jews referred to the law and the prophets. And we had a look at where they came from, and we also need to look now where they're taking us. So we set the stage last week, looking at that backstory leading up to Moses presenting his people with those Ten Commandments. Now, if any of us saw that old film with Charlton Heston, it's very dramatic, but that's kind of not the story. So last week, we briefly just touched on those first two commandments. I'm the Lord your God. You shall not have other gods before me. And, you know, every Sunday when we come in here and we affirm there is but one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, we're keeping that first command because we're remembering and reminding ourselves, in fact, where our power comes from. The second commandment of you shall not make yourself a graven image or any likeness in heaven or earth or below the earth or worship or serve them. And it's quite a bit longer, but I'm bullet pointing it. And so this week, I want to also touch on that third commandment, which is you shall not take the name of the Lord in vain. And the fourth, which is keep holy the Sabbath. These first four commandments are so intertwined, it's really hard to say where one commandment ends and the next one begins. And they're so meaty, they really deserve to be picked apart so that we can discover where we're falling down on the job, because it's possible we might be. And it could be that's why we get stuck at times in our spiritual journey. So, we're really here to look at these four commandments first together. So that first one, I am the Lord your God, you should not have strange gods before me, is really the most important. And it's the one that all the other commandments hinge on. I'm the Lord your God, and you should have no other gods. In those times, again, we have to go back to what the culture and the history was like. There were many gods. There were gods for love, and there were gods for war, and there were gods for prosperity and fertility. And when you think about it, when you look at this list of gods, or when you look at any of the religions that have a lot of gods still, there's a god for every human fear. There's a God for every human anxiety or want. It's almost like we're out picturing those inadequacies out there and we make a God of it. And so the people made idols and carved graven images, as the term is, and they prayed to them and they worshiped them. Don't make graven images or worship them. First commandment is saying only one God, not 20, not all these different gods that represent all our fears and anxiety. There's just one God, a God of power. Second commandment is telling us don't even try to make an idol, because when you make an image, when you get an image in your head, that limits God. Think about it. If you make a God with arms and legs that looks like a person, that so limits this whole idea of God. Nothing we can conceive can possibly capture or convey the true essence of this one God. And so when we have pictures like we do in the Sistine Chapel with God, you know, with a white beard and all that stuff, we have now made God in our image and not in God's image. I think it was Voltaire who said, God created us in his image and likeness, and then humankind returned the favor. And so God has all these attributes of envy and jealousy and vindictiveness and, you know, Not necessarily so. Okay, third commandment, don't take the name of God in vain. Now you may think this is about using the name of God when we swear. Well, maybe, but it's more than that. And that fourth commandment of keep holy the Sabbath. And you say, okay, I go to church on Sunday. So far, so good. Again, also a commandment that has more meat to it than meets the eye. Let's talk a little bit about that idea of craven images, because immediately when I say that, and again from anything we've been taught, we think little idols. You know, we think things that are carved, we could hold in our hand or go to a church or a temple to worship. A craven image is something that we vest power in. Make a god of it. Because when you give power to something, we're making a god of it. So it could be a person or persons, could be things, could be beliefs we have, could be attitudes, maybe even old religious beliefs that are still hanging around in our subconscious, that are holding us back, that are our craven images. Now, I know Moses wasn't concerned about this, but what about social media? What do people think of us? So we take pictures of our food and our clothes and where we go to get feedback, to be acceptable or not acceptable. We're putting power out there. What about advertising that tells us what we have to have, what we have to own in order to be successful or desirable? And then there's the stars, and then there's crystals, and then there's the cards that I'm not going to do this because Saturn is in retrograde. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some effects of planetary gravitational pulls, but I'm just saying if we put our faith or we put our power in that to live our lives, crave an image. Ooh, what about politics? Vote this way, you know, or loyalty to a particular group or party. The weather. I can't go out today because it's affecting my arthritis. Power. Out there. Giving undue power to ailments and handicaps. I love these stories of people who have overcome incredible odds and incredible setbacks. I just find those so amazing. And I think to myself, I wonder whether I would have the ability or the courage to do what they do, but boy, they sure inspire me. We're told in the Bible, first book, Genesis, we're created in the image and likeness of a creative, powerful God who just created the world through the planets in the solar system, pushed back the waters, made the lands, and everything on it, and then decided to create something in God's image and likeness, and we were created. When we look at this essential truth, if we take our eyes off that essential truth of who we are and in whose image we have been created, we're putting our trust and our faith and our power in some kind of craven image. When we do that, when we put the power out there, when we, in essence, give it away, we limit our true nature, or we limit our potential, and we limit our connection with that power and presence, which is pure, unlimited potential. You might be thinking, well, I don't have any craven images. Well, here's one as I was putting this talk together, and it just popped into my head, and I thought, boy, this is a biggie. This is huge. It lends itself to all kinds of fears and anxieties, and we're doing it all the time, and we're seeing it manifested. When we think that everyone should look and act and think and be like us, we've created a craven image of egoism. We've made ourselves God, in essence. And holding on to that craven image of everybody should think like me. Now I know I'm brilliant, but sometimes not so brilliant. Holding that craven image leads to criticism, because if they're not like me and they're not acting like me or they're not looking like me, they're wrong. It leads to judgment, same thing. Oh, and it leads to prejudice, because they're not me. It was interesting, recently I was with an individual who's really a very lovely person, a very giving person in so many respects. And there was so much wrong with the world, with people who weren't of her socioeconomic level and her education and her, and I was, oh. It was difficult to listen to that. And I think that's probably what prompted this particular craven image. Do we do that? Boy, it's so easy to fall into that craven image of egoism. It definitely does not lead to connection in any way, shape, or form. Wherever we're critical or judgmental, wherever our prejudice is showing, we're probably projecting that craven image of ego. And what happens is, it's not so bad. I mean, it's bad enough that we project that craven image, but that becomes a limiting reality. We can't see beyond that image, because there it is. That's our God. That's what we're worshiping. I can tell you, it doesn't take too much to realize that it leads to all kinds of clashes. I find it interesting. I always find a lot of stuff interesting in the Bible, but inquiring minds want to know. These laws, these Ten Commandments, are in the book of Exodus in the Bible. They're not in Genesis, which is about creation and the beginnings. They're in Exodus, which deals with getting out of Egypt. Egypt being a symbol for being enslaved. This story of getting out of Egypt, about getting out of limitation, because what's more limiting than slavery? Getting out of limitation also means getting out of limited thinking, because thoughts and actions and words limit our world, limit our abilities. These Ten Commandments are really steps that show us how to get out of our own limitation, you know, our own weaknesses, our own fearfulness, and sometimes out of our own stupidity. Moses created those Ten Commandments as important guidelines for a primitive people, to hopefully get them into repetitive habits, you know, so that they don't question it so much. It's just do this. If you do this, it'll start soaking in. Your life will change and your consciousness will change. And so the goal was to break through any limited states of consciousness. But you got to start somewhere. You know, with children, we say, don't do that. We don't explain why we tell them not to do that. Eventually, hopefully, they'll mature enough that they'll understand why they shouldn't do that. So, third commandment, don't take the name of the Lord in vain. This is really not about swearing. It's much, again, deeper than that. In ancient times, the name or title of God was I Am. You would see that engraved in certain temples. In the Bible, Yahweh says, I am who am. That sounds kind of confusing. What it's really saying is, I am the beginning. I am the end. I always was. I always will be. I am. I am power. I am potential. I am creation. I am life. Whatever we think of as God, that one power and presence. So if all the power and potential and life and creativity is tied up in I am, and we're created in the image and likeness of God who created us, we also have the power of God, the power of the I am, the potential of God, the life of God, the creativity of God. Ooh. How do you want to take that on for size? That is innate in our nature. So every time we use the phrase, I am, fill in the blank, we're either using it to honor God rightly or either dishonor God. We're using it in vain. So the big question on this commandment is, what do we attach our I am to? Continually. This isn't just a passing, I'm tired. What are we continually reinforcing with that I am? I'm tired. I'm sick. I'm unable. I'm a victim. I'm this way because of my father. I'm this way because of my mother, my boss. I am the way I am because... What are we putting in that blank? Whatever excuses, whatever rationale we use, we're taking the unlimited power and potential and life and creativity of God and dumping it into a confined box. Think about that. That I am, and whatever we put after it, manifests our reality. Consistently reiterating that affirmation about what we are solidifies that reality. It's always, people always say, well, if just thoughts are passing through. No, it's the continual, the consistent thoughts and words in our speech, in our thoughts, create our present reality. So this commandment is about a check on where are our thoughts? A reality of tiredness or sickness or inability? I can't because I am... Or victimhood. What's really great about this is that if we created it, we can uncreate it. And so all we need to do is be aware and catch ourselves, catch those thoughts, catch those words, and affirm life and creativity and potential and power. If we attach our I am to anything less than God, that one power and presence in the universe, we're taking the name of God in vain. Ew. Much more than swearing. I don't know that God really cares about swearing. Fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Why is this commandment even there? You know, why is it important? Yeah. For a lot of us, we've gotten to the point where our Sunday, our Sabbath, is just like every other day. Lots to do, lots to catch up on. Places are open. We can do all the stuff we didn't get done during the week. What this commandment is really about is creating balance in our lives. that time of Sabbath was commanded. As a matter of fact, it got so rigid in Jewish law that if you did anything at all on the Sabbath, you could be condemned to death. It's a reminder for us to stop our busyness. Take time to infill. Whether it's a day of the week, for different religions it's a different day, or maybe it's a certain time of day where we take time to stop and just be open to and infilled with the Spirit of God. Or maybe it's random times during our day where we just stop and take a breath. Think of it as a pause that refreshes, you know, to help us find the time for our spiritual center, because we're going, I don't know about you, but I'm going about 7 different directions. If I don't take the time to pause and take a Sabbath, take a time to relax, to infill consciously, I'll never do it. At any moment, what's really great, we can find that spiritual center within when we most need it. Because isn't that when we need to be reminded of who we are and the power that we work with? The concept of Sabbath is about developing a level of consciousness, not just a set time or a set day of the week. It's about taking the time to plug in, to take time to let Spirit breathe life and energy and creativity and ideas into our whole being. It's being centered in that divine flow. So, these commandments, particularly that 3rd and 4th commandment, don't take the name of your God in vain, honor the Sabbath, keep it holy, are really about being plugged in to the God of that 1st commandment. That power and presence. Plugging in with your I am. Since we're always talking, when we're talking spiritually, we're always talking about consciousness. Our goal here, always, and these 10 commandments help guide us, to help us erase any limitations that are in our way to being all that we were meant to be. Whatever we attach our I am to, and as we often repeat it, it becomes our reality of I'm tired, unlucky, I'm furious, I'm sad. Maybe we should start plugging our I am into I am wise, I'm strong, I'm creative, I'm amazingly musical. I'm loving. I'm filled with joy. People so often will ask me to write an affirmative prayer. It doesn't have to be long. I am, what do you want to be? I am, what's the dream? I am, what's the goal? That's your affirmation. And say it often. As for keeping the Sabbath, it's about creative resting. Plugging into that divine connection. Acknowledging that one power and one presence in our life. And after our work, to take some time to just take a breath and stop. And let divine action move through us. I know many times as I'm trying to pull something together, whether it's an article or a writing or a talk like this, I do the research, I do the work, I make the notes, I sometimes get some ideas, and a lot of times I'll just sleep on it. And I wake up with many times really great ideas, because Spirit's been working during my Sabbath and making it all come together. We work so hard, we really need to let Spirit do that work And that's why the Sabbath is so important, to teach and heal and inspire us. So those are the first four. How have we been keeping those commandments? Especially if we start to look at them this way.